Hello and welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian, and we're coming to you from Fort Catterton by Catterton Towers.
This is true. We had a cacophony of technical issues last time, because of course we are based out of Ottawa.
So I think you would be a fool to guess what we're, no, to fail to guess what we're going to talk about this week.
We are a Canadian,
dear listeners, yes,
gay talk show. Whatever did happen, it's Canadian and gay. Enlighten us, Sebastian.
Something to do with home decor?
Yes. interior decorating happened, this week's episode brought to you by Home Hardware. No, of course, we are talking about the rather extensive apology.
The federal apology, yes.
That Prime Minister Justin Trudeau gave.
Yes.
So we are going to do our best to show some clips.
Yes.
Of the apology
and
sort of comment and observe.
I tried to listen to the whole thing and
God, it took so long.
25 minutes through the half hour, and then I realized that the half hour is actually not the full version, that the full apology was an hour long.
His apology was about half an hour.
Okay.
I mean, but then
the leaders to every other party needed to comment.
The Conservatives had to say things, and then the Green Party apologized for things.
I still think it's weird that the Green Party apologized because they didn't exist yet at that time. So if anyone's hands are clean, it's the Green Party. And I don't know if the NDP was the NDP had
like
a federal
organic soap.
Yes. I know the NDP was definitely a provincial. No, it was a federal party at that time.
Yeah.
In the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, yeah.
Well, we're going to go a bit further back than that. So let's jump to
your childhood?
Yes. Tell me about your childhood. No, we're going to start off with Justin Trudeau, who mentioned some of the historical backgrounds.
Yes.
And we'll pick up from there, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Now imagine, Mr. Speaker, being subjected to laws, policies and hiring practices that label you as different, as less than. Imagine having to fight for the basic rights that your peers enjoy over and over again. And imagine being criminalized for who you are. This is the truth for many of the Canadians present in the gallery today, many more listening across the country. This is the devastating story of people who were branded criminals by the government, people who lost their livelihoods and, in some cases, their lives. These aren't distant practices of governments long forgotten. These happened systematically in Canada with a timeline more recent than any of us would like to admit. And discrimination against LGBTQ2 communities was quickly codified in criminal offences like buggery, gross indecency, and body house provisions. Bathhouses were raided. People were entrapped by police. Our laws bolstered and emboldened those who wanted to attack non-conforming sexual desire. Our laws made private and consensual sex between same-sex partners a criminal offense, leading to the unjust arrest, conviction, and imprisonment of Canadians. This criminalization would have lasting impacts for things like employment, volunteering, and travel.
So that was just the first clip we have of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's apology. Now, this one is to the gay community.
The first clip of many.
Well, of like four. And the reason why we've clipped it up is because we're not going to go minute by minute and give you a breakdown.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to do that to our listeners.
Yes.
What I wanted to cut up is because he addresses lots of different things at different points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it should be noted, and some of it we need to sort of let him speak, hear what he's saying, and then pick it up. So in this bit, he mentions briefly the bathhouse raids, the criminalization of HIV, the criminalization of homosexuality, where just being a homo is you know enough to get you locked up, thrown in jail. They would raid bathhouses under the guise of public health, and it was a huge issue. I mean, it's those kinds of raids that sparked the Stonewall riots. And the death of Judy Garland.
So. They did the raid. Unrelated. we could go into that another episode. Yeah, the raids. Whenever they did raids on bars, on bathhouses, on any kind of public space, they would use weird drummed up excuses until somebody sued and closed that loophole, and then they would find something else.
Yeah.
I remember when I was quite young, there would occasionally be bar raids on the accusation of it being a common body house, which is a fancy way of saying like a den of prostitution, basically. Mm-hmm. When you have that many gay men in one space, clearly there's going to be somebody selling it, so you must break
down
the whole thing.
Exactly. Perish the thought that it could be consensual and legal.
Well,
specifically legal in this case.
Even if there was no money exchanging hands, common body houses, a separate law. I don't even think that law exists anymore because it's still archaic.
Double check.
Next time we play a clip, I will look it up while we're on break, and I will come back to you and tell you if that's still a thing.
We will confirm one tonight. Yeah, exactly.
Mostly you should be aware of this so that next time you have a big raging house party and your neighbors accuse you of having
a common body house.
The wrong kind of raging house party, or the right kind of raging house party.
We once hosted a sausage party where we'd got a new sausage maker.
Yeah.
And everyone was invited to bring their meat, and we were going to pack them into sausages.
If you remember correctly,
people were left with the most unusual interpretation of what we were going to do.
The sausage party, we've been doing theme parties for years, but the sausage party was actually my birthday.
Yes.
Because sausage is my favorite meat.
This is true.
Which a lot of people think is hilarious, but what
like
could
breakfast and
It's
delicious.
Even knowing how justice is made, I still appreciate it as well. So
you know, I don't like knowing how black pudding is made, which is a black blood sausage.
It's clots.
But a part of me,
it's mostly clots.
My heart breaks that I can't get it here in Canada, or at least in Ontario. If you know a good supplier of black pudding, please let us know. Tweet at TalkAnQueen. I'd love to know.
Actually, I know a place in Burlington, but that's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We started off by talking about the historical context, actually.
Yes.
And something of note here is this was the apology kind of happened across multiple time frames. Mm-hmm. So it talked about things that happened in the 50s. It talked about the sort of post-McCarthyist commie hunt, because there is this interesting link between communism and homosexuality that people who were not reasonable assumed to be true.
But we can get into that a little bit more when that bit of the apology comes up.
Sure, absolutely. But so there was that era, and then there was like there's different periods of history. Mm-hmm. But something that's kind of complicated that Luke and I were kind of not necessarily cringing, but kind of being like, oh, I mean, yeah, but no, but I guess close enough, was the language had changed multiple times over this. The practices ended in the 90s, so we're looking at a 40, maybe 50-year period, depending on how you want to count it. And language and terms had changed quite a bit during this period. So referring to historical communities using modern language, you're either picking out something that didn't exist yet, or you're using a term that could technically apply to anyone or apply to no one. And it was there's a lot of just there's a lot of problems with that. I mean, it's talking about historical events using modern language is always weird and complicated, and it's impossible to read anything about England, Victorian or pre-Victorian, without having that problem.
Yeah,
because you don't talk about housewives in the Victorian era.
No,
because there was something else. It was a different phenomenon. You know, it's not stay-at-home moms, because like motherhood was a career at that time. So it's just weird. I mean, unrelated. But yeah, so the apology to my ear felt mildly garbled.
Well, I thought the apology was actually quite good. Well, I liked that they addressed a lot of things.
The spirit behind it was fantastic. Yeah. It was some of the language I was listening to.
Well, yeah, so in terms of maybe a linguistic perspective, it wasn't great. What I liked is that it did mention these things. And somebody's probably thinking, why is that relevant? Like, why... We haven't even got to the I'm sorry bit yet. And these two homos are still chatting away about stuff from the 50s. Now, the reason why I bring it up is because in Australia, just last week, there was a review of an inquest of a suicide decision. So they decided, I think, in the late 90s, early 90s, late 80s, that a guy who had fallen from a cliff in a mountain range in... I think it's Southwest Wales in Australia, had died of suicide.
Okay.
But apparently it was quite common for gay men to fall off the side of this cliff. There was a cold case review, I think, and then that led them to believe that maybe it may have been a hate crime. So they launched a new coroner's inquest and discovered that it was. So essentially they're saying, okay, well, if this guy that was ruled a suicide was a hate crime, how many other ones were? Now, the reason I bring this up is because in Ottawa, there's a lot of historical background to the murder of Alain Brousseau. He was dangled from the Alexandria Bridge, the interprovincial bridge between Quebec and Ontario, in Ottawa.
One of them.
And was fell to his death in the Ottawa River. Now, that one was a clear-cut case of hate crime.
Yeah.
Now, we know that one of the reasons why the gay community was so gosh darn upset that none of the police services in Gatineau or in Ottawa or over the fence didn't want to deal with it is because it wasn't the first time. You know, men had been dying off the back of Parliament Hill for over a decade, but no one took it seriously.
Yeah.
So I bring this up because that is a Canadian thing that happened.
Yep.
We haven't got demands for coroner's reports yet. I think it's going to come. I think Australia is now setting the stage for us to look at.
Well, everyone that I've spoken to, a lot of the older generations here in Ottawa, the people that I've spoken to, they said they never got the feeling that there was something serial about it. They thought it was just a series of unrelated murders, which technically is worse.
Yeah.
Because it was just, you know, open season as opposed to one messed up person. Because if it's one messed up person, you know, you track them down, you stick them in a room with a tiny window, and they never leave that room ever again, and, you know, job done. But if it was a system, if it was a process that just, like, regularly happened, well, there's going to be a lot of people who never find justice as a result.
Exactly. And it's all about that. It's about, back then it was about feeling unbelievably unsafe, but now it's, you know, it's looking at these people whose lives have been lost for no reason, no rhyme, no reason, and there's just no justice there because it was ignored, it was swept under the rug.
Yeah.
Anyways, I appreciate that, at least in passing, that was brought up by Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to jump to the second bit that I want to talk about, and that is the fruit machine.
Oh, yes.
And the purge.
The purge.
Purge, which is a great term. And it's not a terrible movie from the States. It's actually a real thing that happened in Canada. Now, what we'll do is we'll play the clips and then we'll jump to a song and we'll be back just after the song to kind of offer our input on his sort of context for the apology there. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
The 1950s. To the early 1990s, the Government of Canada exercised its authority in a cruel and unjust manner, undertaking a campaign of oppression against members and suspected members of the LGBTQ2 community. The goal was to identify these workers throughout the public service, including the Foreign Service, the military, and the RCMP, and persecute them. You see, the thinking of the day was that all non-heterosexual Canadians would automatically be at increased risk of blackmail by our adversaries due to what was called character weakness. This thinking was prejudiced and flawed. And sadly, what resulted is nothing short of a witch hunt. The public service, the military, and the RCMP spied on their own people inside and outside of workplaces. During this time, the federal government even dedicated funding to an absurd device known as the Fruit Machine, a failed technology that was supposed to measure homosexual attraction. Canadians were monitored for anything that could be construed as homosexual behavior, with community groups, bars, parks, and even people's homes under constant watch. When the government felt that enough evidence had accumulated, some suspects were taken to secret locations in the dark of night to be interrogated. They were asked invasive questions about their relationships and sexual preferences. Hooked up to polygraph machines, these law-abiding public servants had the most intimate details of their lives cut open. Women and men were abused by their superiors and asked demeaning, probing questions about their sex lives. Some were sexually assaulted. Those who admitted they were gay were fired, discharged, or intimidated into resignation. They lost dignity, lost careers, and had their dreams and indeed their lives shattered. Under the harsh glare of the spotlight, people were forced to make an impossible choice: their career or their identity. And the very thing Canadian officials feared, blackmail of LGBTQ2 employees, was happening. But it wasn't at the hand of our adversaries. It was at the hands of our own government.
I want to draw you a floor plan of my head and heart. I want to give directions, helpful hints, what you'll be looking for, what you'll be looking for. In my heart forever, I know I hold this loss in my heart forever. I know I hold.
welcome back to Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. That was Sarah Bolaris covering Floor Plan from The Con, but it's The Con X Covers. The Con was the album originally put out by Tegan and Sarah. Now, I wanted to play The Con covers for a while, and I chose one of the Canadians who've covered it.
Yeah.
Hashtag CanCon.
I think this episode, more than usual, it's pretty important we do the
stick to that. Exactly, yeah. And the reason why I want to bring it up is that all of the proceeds from this album actually is going to go support a trust for LGBT, I think it's students. So that's pretty exciting stuff. That's the money goes to a good cause as well. So
what do we have to say about this?
The last bit, before we jump to more apology.
Yeah.
The last bit, he was talking about the fruit machine, and he made one comment that really stuck out to me. And he said that, you know, a lot of people were the excuse given, and I think that's an accurate description. The excuse given is that, heaven forbid, we have homos in the civil service, in any department, doesn't matter where you were or what you're doing, some more severely affected by it than others. But heaven forbid there be homo in there, because the commies, i.e. Russia, could find out, could blackmail them, and then we have a compromised health inspector.
Yeah.
And heaven knows how that'll go. And what Trudeau said, that, you know, in reality, what actually happened is that the only blackmail that happened was the government blackmailing its own employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me where all the other gays are at, or we'll fire you and out you in public.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that wasn't the Russians.
Yeah.
That was CSIS.
Other Canadians, yeah. And I do remember a few years ago, you were reading a book on... Well, you were reading a book on MI5 and also a book on MI6, and they're each like 5 inches thick. Like, they were massive.
Yeah, like 600-page
tomes. Tomes, yeah. And I remember at one point in time, you came up to me, you're super excited, and you're like, do you know what they did in England in the 60s when all this fruit machine stuff was going on? And do you remember what was going on?
In Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah, they would actually, I think it was the Canadians that went over to Britain because they caught wind that Britain was looking at the threat of compromised agents.
Mm-hmm.
So
compromised civil servants, even agents, yeah.
Compromised civil servants. So what they did is they sent, the RCMP went over to Britain, to MI5 and MI6, MI5 being military intelligence, 5 military intelligence, 6, and said, you know, we can help you with they're everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you throw a stick, you'll hit a gay civil servant. It's you know, we can help you out. We've got this great machine.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll spot a homo at 50 paces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great machine, and, you know, you won't need any anything else. And Britain said, thanks, no thanks, we're good.
Yeah.
And effectively what Britain did, which isn't great, I mean, I'm not excusing their behavior here.
But it is less bad.
It is less bad. Yeah. So what they did was, if you were in a position where you had the security clearance and access to something, you were promoted into a department that didn't require you having that access.
Yeah.
You know, and they...
A lot of lateral movement.
Quietly move people sideways.
But people kept their pensions. They didn't lose their jobs.
Yeah. They may have lost potential career mobility.
They could have hit a ceiling, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's essentially it. In Canada, they were all for arresting them, kicking them out, or making their lives such a living hell that to stay would have cost you your loved ones, it would have your mental health, and a lot of them just resigned.
Yeah. And it's the machine itself was basically a lie detector test, except it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
For a whole bunch of reasons. So,
is that the one that measured the muscles?
The turgidity, is the technical term.
Yeah, we'll stick to technical terms.
Yeah, so it's they either put two rings at the base and one at the base and one at the tip of your little mister, and then they measure turgidity as you watch adult cinema, or they had another one that was like a rod that went like in the woman's hoo-hoo dilly. And it would also measure turgidity. But the problem was there's a whole bunch of factors that could cause you to go firm or flaccid. And nerves, excitement, anxiety.
The wind, temperature.
high blood pressure can, because you have sudden spikes of blood pressure mm-hmm. all the time. If you sit long, if you sit still for a very long period of time and then uncross your legs, your blood pressure shoots up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really easy to misfire a positive or to falsely have a negative. I mean, they could also be showing stuff that you're just not into. You could be super gay and they just keep showing dudes that you're like, eh, not my type.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was really not a good thing.
No, it was scientifically proven to be full of
malarkey, basically.
Yeah.
But the device is actually still used for actual sexual dysfunction. So they measure sexual dysfunction using this equipment. So it actually turned around and turned into a medical piece to see how quickly you become turgid. And they measure that to see like...
Oh, I see.
Right. Or, well, turgid also for the canal, mm-hmm. how firm mm-hmm. it gets. That's also a measure that they like to take for various reasons. You're learning medical stuff right now.
We are.
Anyway, but it turns out even the polygraph test has been proven... Time and time again.
It's inadmissible in court now.
I think it was in the 60s the first studies that came out that said it doesn't really measure anything. It measures how comfortable you are, is literally what it is. And that could be anything. It could be like, you know, the person questioning you has bad BO or they're wearing a perfume that smells exactly like your ex that you hate. And then all of a sudden the whole test is off.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly measuring how comfortable you are. Anyway, so that was the good old fruit machine, a nice Canadian invention. There's good old Canadian innovation for you. And what else did he mention? I just blanked.
I mean, there's a few other things. I want to mention that in the 60s, Britain had the Cambridge spy ring, which is, that was Kim Philby, Donald Duet McLean, Guy Burgess, and Anthony Blunt. Cambridge 4 or Cambridge 5. And they were... You know, a high rank, because back in the day, to get any job of importance in Britain, you have to be the son of somebody already important.
Yes.
Like, the meritocratic system in Britain is a rather new invention.
Mm.
It is very classist. So the Russians went in at the ground floor and recruited a whole bunch of Marxist-leaning students straight out of the First World War, I think it was. And then by the time the 60s rolled round, they were all high-ranking officials. One was the purveyor of the Queen's art.
Okay.
And, like, in and out access to the Queen. One was a high-ranking official with MI5. One worked at the American Embassy. And they were all KGB agents. Like, they were actual spy novel-level Russian agents. And I think one or two, if not all of them, were also gay. So this paranoia was relatively well-founded. And it wasn't actually until, I think, the 80s or 90s when Britain came to realize that there were only five of them. They thought there was a sixth that they hadn't found that was, like, in charge of some department somewhere leaking all the spy information to the Russians. But they reckon that it was just the four.
Yeah. I mean, it's still super interesting that they actually did turn it. Not only that, there was...
In the context of, like, there actually was a gay spy ring for the Russians.
Yeah, but it was, like, 20 years after the commie scare actually happened. It mm-hmm. was...
Well, it was during then, and it was funny because the commie scare was happening whilst the guy was in the American Embassy leaking information.
That's just when they... Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. That's just when they finally...
the 60s is when they started to defect to Russia because the net was closing, so... The reason why we're bringing this up, and a big part of the apology, has also been instigated by a lawsuit from the former civil servants who were ousted or pushed out the door for being gay.
Right, yeah.
And they sued, and there was that big $100 million agreement. And I believe it's being phrased in such a way that I can't remember whether it's been called compensation or, like, compassion or something, but essentially it's an agreement, but the government isn't gonna fork over, like, lost earnings and so on, otherwise the bill would be astronomical.
It's deserved, I would say. I mean, at least I actually remember having this conversation with a few people where a lot of them were saying that if they reinstated their pension even to the rate it would have been if they had been given their severance package when they quit. Like, even just, you know, when you left, you had worked for 15 years at that point in time. So we're going to give you a 15 years worth of severance package, a lot of people are like, that's not bad. That's a good start.
I mean, the exact details are, not totally public at the moment. But it was certainly a big announcement and a big part of the news.
You know it's not going to stay secret for long. That's for sure.
No, that is true. Well, let's turn now to the actual apology by Justin Trudeau. It is a powerful piece. We wanted to include it. The apology in all is about 30 minutes, so we will cut it off at some point so that we're not...
Well, yes.
Yeah, otherwise it would be far too long. Anyways, this is Justin Trudeau bringing us an apology to the LGBTQ2 community.
The number one job of any government is to keep its citizens safe. And on this, we have failed LGBTQ2 communities and individuals time and time again. It is with shame and sorrow and deep regret for the things we have done that I stand here today and say we were wrong, we apologize, I am sorry, we are sorry. For suppressing Two-Spirit Indigenous values and beliefs, we are sorry. For abusing the power of the law and making criminals of citizens, we are sorry. To all the LGBTQ2 people across this country who we have harmed in countless ways, we are sorry. To those who were left broken by a prejudiced system, and to those who took their own lives, we have failed you. For stripping you of your dignity, for robbing you of your potential, for treating you like you were dangerous, indecent, and flawed, we are sorry. To the victims of the purge, who were surveilled, interrogated, and abused, who were forced to turn on their friends and colleagues, who lost wages, lost health, and lost loved ones, we betrayed you, and we are so sorry. To those who were fired, to those who resigned, to those who stayed at a great personal and professional cost, to those who wanted to serve but never got the chance because of who you are. You should have been permitted to serve your country, and you were stripped of that option. We are sorry. We were wrong. Indeed, all Canadians missed out on important contributions you could have, would have made to our society. You were not bad soldiers, sailors, airmen and women. You were not predators, and you were not criminals. You served your country with integrity and courage. You are professionals. You are patriots. And above all, you are innocent. And for all your suffering, you deserve justice. You deserve peace. It is our collective shame that you were so mistreated. And it is our collective shame that this apology took so long. Many who suffered are no longer alive to hear these words. And for that, we are truly sorry.
We're back.
We are.
And that was such a powerful apology. Very, very powerful. I think when I was watching it the first time, I was at work and I just had it playing in the background, and I stopped what I was doing and turned it on, and I was like, this is one of those moments, you know, when you're flicking through a history book, Churchill, we will fight them on the beaches, one of those, maybe not so much for like the rest of the world, yeah, but for like the Canadian gay community, this is our Churchill speech, you know?
Well, for me, being the cynical sort, it felt like it was written to sound like that, and it kind of felt like the motivating speech before the last game in a football sports movie where you have the coach, and he's talking the way that no coach would actually coach, but then somebody in Hollywood thought that this is what a speech sounds like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
Or like the guy with Mel Gibbs with a really bad Scottish accent in Braveheart.
I've actually heard accent specialists criticize that movie, and they say that 50% of the time he was actually not that bad. The choice of words and the general message was on.
Mm.
It was, hey, everyone, we did wrong. We know we did wrong. We acknowledge we did wrong. The following things happen. It was inappropriate. We apologize.
It was wrong. Yeah. And there was lots of I'm sorries. Yep. We are sorries on behalf of the government. And then, of course... various other politicians also apologize.
Well, there's actually different kinds of apologies in the world. Weirdly enough, I've studied apologies.
I mean, you are Canadian.
Well, it's...
I thought that was called elementary school.
No, I also have a background in linguistics.
I think it's on, like, the Canadian citizens immigration test. You know, what are the 10 types of apology?
No, this is a philosophy of language thing. So, I mean, there's... two kinds of apologies that I'm going to talk about in specific. One is an acknowledgement of remorse, and one is an acknowledgement of wrongdoing.
Actually, there are three types of apologies.
Oh, there's seven, I think.
In the eyes of the law, an apology is not an admission of guilt.
Well, okay. But what I mean is, like, you could bump into somebody and you could say, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you
acknowledge... and that's not an admission of guilt.
Well, no, that's an acknowledgement of wrongdoing.
Oh, I see.
But it's not acknowledgement of remorse. It could be like, hey, it happens, but, like, the fact that it did happen, I don't feel good about that. And it's, or I acknowledge that I did that. There's different kinds of apologies. And he phrased the apology to nail several different types of apology.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear that there was an expression of remorse, there was an acknowledgement of wrongdoing, and there was an acknowledgement of historical injustice. And the phrasing actually managed to cover multiple bases in a pretty thorough way.
You know, there has been a critique in the gay community. Well, I say the gay community, in the queer community.
Yeah.
I heard some criticism from some trans folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the gist of it was... that the apology didn't really recognize them very much. There were passing mentions.
Right.
There was a moment where he discussed two-spirited folks and how that identity was, you know, wiped out by colonialism.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, we shipped in this idea that what sexuality should be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't agree with it, then, you know... welcome to the local prison system. Like, that's your option. So he did apologize specifically for that, which was nice to hear.
Yeah.
The
problem is, though, that, I mean, this is why I mentioned multiple time frames earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the instances where, I mean, I could see somebody maybe complaining about that, but the trans identity wasn't yet, in its current iteration anyway, wasn't yet formed. At that time, if you actually go back to interviews and historical documents and all the literature from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, trans wasn't used yet as a term. But more importantly, the actual things that he's apologizing for on behalf of the government was especially, but not exclusively, targeting men who have sex with men. I'm not going to say gay men because, you know, there could be bi men who got swept up in it as well. But it was largely targeting men who have sex with men, and while they were at it, also women who have sex with women. But it was mostly targeting the men, and a lot of other people kind of got swept up into it as well. So the trans identity at that time, so the term in the closet largely refers to trans individuals because they could only, at that time they referred to it as cross-dressing. So if you weren't a trans person, you were in the closet trans person, in the closet cross-dresser, which meant that you dressed up in the clothes of the opposite gender, but only around your own home for your own comfort's sake. This, at that time, was perceived as gay male activity. If you were a trans woman, you were just perceived as being a weird and fruity gay man. So even though trans people did get nailed by this weird policy as well, it was done under the assumption that they were gay and bi men and women.
Even bi wasn't really a thing.
Bi wasn't a thing, but if they found you coming out of a gay bar, then as far as they were concerned, you were out.
Yeah.
Right? Out, not out as in out of the closet, but out as in out of the government. It definitely acknowledging that there were trans people as well who were affected by this. But the policies and the programs involved were designed to target and root out gay men. Not root out, because that also means something in Australia. So to locate all of the gay and bi men, especially, also noting that the government had sexist hiring practices at that time, so the civil service was way more male than now. They didn't quite yet reach gender parity. From what I understand, the civil service is now very close to gender parity. It's like 55% male or something like that. Anyway, but yeah, no, it was something like 80-90% male if you're looking at the 60s, 70s, 80s. So it was largely targeting gay men and also bi men. So it's not to say that the trans critique is wrong. It's that the trans critique needs to be put into the correct historical context to acknowledge the fact that, yes, there were also what we would call trans-identified individuals who were also affected, but at that time they were sort of, they were swept up in it in as much as a heterosexual man who had a bit of a lisp.
And heterosexual man with a lisp was Alain Brosseau. You know, he was straight.
Yeah.
And he was murdered in an anti-gay hate crime.
Well, he also had really nice hair. I've seen pictures. He had really cute hair.
Fabulous hair.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think the critique was that there's a lot of injustices against the trans community that weren't mentioned. Some of them were in unfair access to healthcare.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of other ones in there as well. But I think you're right. When you look at...
A lot of that was not deliberate programs set up by the federal government, though. A lot of this is just negligent provincial-level ministries of health. So it's not that the critique is wrong, but rather that it's aimed
it's
at
not
the
just
wrong
that. It's
level.
Like you can't fly if you're trans and so on. It's
oh,
like,
yeah, all that
there's
nonsense.
There's lots of other stuff, but a lot of it was not done deliberately, but rather legacies of systems that just wouldn't bend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do, and they've changed now.
Oh, yeah.
We're much better.
Some of those laws only lasted a couple of years. I mean, they happened, so that's bad. I mean, I don't want to downplay it for only happening for 2 years, because it happened at all, and that's garbage.
Well, I think, and I realize that as a gay man, this may be seen as inappropriate by some, but the bulk of the targeting, the bulk of the victims of hate crime, the bulk of the victims of state-sponsored homophobia and discrimination, and the bulk of the people arrested in raids and in
Canada or just in general?
In Canada.
Okay, yeah.
Was gay men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were the most visible. I mean, you
internationally,
know.
Of the countries that have a death penalty for homosexuality, they only have that law for men.
Yeah.
They don't have that law for women.
Well, we're going to jump now to
the last
section that we're going to share. And this is where my critique...
Your critique. Because, yeah, you gave me a preview earlier, but you didn't actually tell me what it was. So I'm interested as to what your critique is.
So we're gonna get into it, and we'll be back just after this.
It is my hope that we will look back on today as a turning point. But there is still much more work to do ahead of us. Discrimination against LGBTQ2 communities is not a moment in time, but an ongoing, centuries-old campaign. We want to be a partner, an ally to LGBTQ2 Canadians in the years going forward. There are still real struggles facing these communities, including for those who are intersex, queer people of color, and others who suffer from intersectional discrimination. Transgender Canadians are subjected to discrimination, violence, and aggression at alarming rates. In fact, trans people didn't even have explicit protection under federal human rights legislation until this year. The Canadians previously convicted of consensual sexual activity with same-sex partners will have their criminal records permanently destroyed. Further, I am pleased to announce that over the course of the weekend, we reached an agreement in principle with those involved in the class action lawsuit for actions related to the purge. Never again will Canada's government be the source of so much pain for members of the LGBTQ2 communities. We promise to consult and work with individuals and communities to right these wrongs and begin to rebuild trust. We will ensure that there are systems in place so that these kinds of hateful practices are a thing of the past. Discrimination and oppression of LGBTQ2 Canadians will not be tolerated anymore. We will support one another in our fight for equality, and Canada will stand tall on the international stage as we proudly advocate for equal rights for LGBTQ2 communities around the world.
Hello and welcome back. That was kind of like some of the last points in Justin Trudeau's speech, and it's very forward thinking, where going to work, and you know, there are intersectional barriers to that still exist, and there's, you know, things that need to be done, things that need to achieve. We have to be forerunners of rights across the world.
Well, I mean, I think I've already told you what my opinion on this is. I come from multiple people in my family are union people from the steel mills of Hamilton. So everything that he has to say about the future, I'm like, well, why don't you just address the fact that Canada's fallen behind in labor rights and we've undone all the labor rights movement success stories from like the 40s through to the 70s. I mean, so many things. The gender-based earnings gap would disappear so fast through labor rights alone. It's astounding. Anyway, so I mean, a lot of these critiques, I'm like, but why don't we just do our job as the government and just do your job? These would not exist.
And this week's show was brought to you by QP107. not actually, that's a joke. But my critique of it is, you know, Trudeau's pointing it in the direction of now we look and we become a stallion of good practice. You know, in Kyrgyzstan, they arrested a couple inside their own home just last week, went into their own home, arrested them, and did a practice that has been deemed by the UN as torture, and that was forced anal examinations. What are we doing about that? Do we give Kyrgyzstan aid? Are we going to keep giving them aid? What about I think it was in Tanzania, something happened recently. In the Philippines, I think things have happened. You know, our show is very good at bringing up examples that are happening right now. And it's like, is our foreign policy actually going to account for this? Are we actually going to adjust aid budgets? Are we actually going to change, you know, where we go and help based on whether or not they're upholding the high standard that we're claiming to be showing the world? You know, I hear that line, and I know that we have brought up multiple times, and we've tried to reach out to various offices in the government about this, and it's deaf ears.
Well, the other thing is that they've actually shown in the past that withholding aid doesn't do half as much as investing in embassies. But I mean, that's still the same thing. Are we going to invest in the embassies in Kyrgyzstan?
What is being done?
What are we
to
doing?
Reflect this?
Yeah,
exactly. So that's my the bee in my bonnet over this is that it's all well and good apologizing for what happened, but moving forward, are we actually going to put our money where our mouth is? And more importantly, not put our money where our mouth is. For example, Jamaica was about to pass laws that would have effectively criminalized homosexuality.
Right, okay.
Are we going to pull money out of Haiti? You know, Quebec is one of the largest funders for Haiti in terms of aid. Would the government put pressure on Quebec to help quash this law? Like, what, you know, what realistically is going to happen? I don't think the law came about.
Well, I'm on the fence about withholding aid because it can hurt people on the ground. Absolutely. I think part of it is the, you know, we're fine now, so everything is fine now. So, like, our backyard is tidy.
Yeah.
That's what we care about, which is cold. The government's primary job is to make sure that we as a nation are functioning, although labor laws don't matter. But anyway, that's unrelated. So, prioritizing keeping your own ship in order before going elsewhere. I mean, that was one of the things that the president of China critiqued Obama for a few years ago, where Obama was talking about human rights complaints, and China, the Prime Minister of China was like, "So tell me about that prison system you have in America right now, that whole prison industrial complex thingy that I've heard about." And it was, you know, and it didn't mean that Obama was wrong about China. It just meant that China was right to say, you know,
what to say about glass houses,
et tu quoque. And it was, yeah, no, it was really, I got a laugh out of that, by the way. I mean, Obama was right, but so was the Prime Minister of China.
I don't think it's Prime Minister.
It was a Prime Minister, like, Premier, I think, or something. Premier? President?
No, I think it's
Premier. I mean, it's going to be a Chinese word, really, so it's going to be a bad translation of the Chinese word.
Anyway, unfortunately, that's all we got time for.
Is it?
Yeah, we're smack bang out of time.
Time flies when you're debating politics.
This is true. Now, before we go, what is your opinion of the apology?
Overdue, super important, glad it happened, and not that bad.
All right, I like it.
It was in brief.
Let us know what you thought of Justin Trudeau's apology. Tweet us at TalkCanQueer, find us on Facebook, and of course reach out to your local campus or community radio station where you're hearing us now, maybe, and let us know. And that's all we have time for. We are playing out with Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tadak's song, You've Got to Run, Spirit of the Wind. And we will be back next week.
Oh, yes.
And that's all for now. I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
You got to run.